missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Britt.
Hi.
Delaney.
Yo.
And Mare.
Hi.
Today we'll be discussing Remembrances, the clip show episode of Book 4 of The Legend of Korra. In addition, we'll be discussing the situation surrounding this episode as outlined by Brian Konitzko's Tumblr post, briankonitzko.tumblr.com. And we'll also discuss what's to come in the final 5 episodes of Book 4, and as Brian says, poop is getting real. So, which is what he always says, that doesn't mean anything, but apparently there's a lot of, apparently there's a lot of plot to come in the last episodes. Just a note, we will not be grading this episode Remembrances. We'll not be treating it like a typical episode of Korra. More details on that when we get to the episode discussion. But first, we want to discuss the situation surrounding Remembrances, which was only given to us yesterday by Brian. I mean, we kind of figured out that this was going to be a clip show from a promo image Nick put out, and then a few critics who had early copy of the episode, eventually saying that, yeah, this is just a clip show. I think it was better to know that it was a clip show going in, or else I just would have been like, wow, this isn't a real episode. I'm really disappointed. What do you guys think?
I didn't really get on Tumblr or the internet beforehand because I've been busy, so it was a clip show. I mean, I kind of figured because I knew the title was Remembrances, so I knew it would be a recap show, and I really didn't mind. It was fine.
There's pros and cons to it. Like, I mean, I'm glad that I knew going in beforehand, but I still think it was kind of unprofessional by the critics.
I mean, regardless of what they said, like, Brian would have put this post out, right?
Yeah.
So it's,
Or do you think Brian would...
No, I don't think it was a reaction to that. I doubt he saw anything like that. Like, I think this is just what he wanted to do. And it makes sense that he wouldn't have gotten into it until now, because he was in Korea for a while.
Yeah.
I wanted to know that this would be a clips episode. There's only 5 minutes of original footage in this episode. And so here's the situation surrounding that. Basically, Brian says in his post, that's a year and a half ago. Nick says, we were duped on a large scale. Nick, higher-ups told him that the Book 4 budget was getting slashed, I'm now quoting Brian, almost to the tune of an entire episode's budget. We had two options. One, let go a significant number of crew members several weeks early, or two, make a clips episode. We never considered the first option. We weren't going to do that to our crew, and even if we were callous enough to do so, we never would have been able to finish the season without them. But having grown up on TV in the 80s and 90s, we all dread clips episodes where characters are saying, remember that time when, and leftover footage is reheated for no one's enjoyment, blah, blah, blah. He says it's in animes and stuff, so they made... I made what he thought were really awesome and clever clips episode. They mixed 5 minutes of new footage in with old and set up context where the characters would be reflecting on past events while narrating over them, offering new insights, or at least providing humor. I pitched this angle to Mike and he agreed this was the best way to turn big old lemon into some lemonade. So the situation, as outlined there, is that Nick abruptly cuts their budget for Book 4, and they're forced to either fire people or turn one episode with old footage because the animation would be the most expensive part of the process. Mm-hmm. An option is not to make fewer episodes because Nick actually mandates when networks place orders, they mandate a certain number of episodes. So you can't just say, I'm going to make less than what you want. Nick is basically saying, we're going to give you less money to make the same number of episodes. And they did so after they had already told them to make a certain number of episodes, right? So yeah. Basically this is... this is pretty pretty terrible with Nick. And in fact, I think what's interesting about this Brian's Tumblr post is, one, I think his tone is actually very anti-Nick. Like, he usually doesn't do this. He's usually very neutral, but he says they're duped on a large scale, right?
That's pretty rude. I think he tries to remain neutral because he doesn't want to cause, like, more problems than they've already caused.
Yeah, I agree.
but I think this is
going over the line, right? Yeah. Number two, him giving us this information almost certainly is not what Nick wanted. Nick would not, I mean, you haven't seen Nick's Twitter link to this or anything, be like, here's an explanation. Like, no, because this is not, they don't want
people to know. Did you notice what the Facebook put up when they put up the episode?
They like kind of like quoted him, but they linked to the episode and didn't link to his article, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So like they just don't want you to see this part where they say, we slashed the budget, which I mean, it makes sense. They don't want you to see it. But regardless of that, this is terrible. Brian's obviously upset at them. I also think this is a good indicator that Brian won't be making another show for Nickelodeon. I can't imagine he will after this post or anything like this.
I would not. I could not. No.
No.
I would rather just not make television.
Yeah. So like, I agree.
This is very unprofessional.
I haven't heard of something like this, slashing the budget after you already ordered. Like the network's allowed to cut the budget, but you're going to do so very early on in the process and then outline that number specifically to them before you like order a set number of episodes or something. So I wrote an opinion post about this on my Tumblr, like an indictment of Nickelodeon. And I would like to, I guess, give an editorial position from this podcast on Nickelodeon, which is that we are done with Nickelodeon. I mean, this is my opinion. I am speaking for myself as the host of the podcast. I do not see any reason to support this network any longer as a fan of Korra or otherwise. There's no reason to give them support because they will be putting up the last episodes of Book 4 regardless. Like, there's no hostages being held here. They're not going to not release the last episodes, right? This is just free money for them. They're already releasing the episodes at 3 and 6 a.m. They're already pulled it from television based on their own mistakes. And this comes after they've done things like callously leak episodes in the past. Big spoiler, but that was not the general Nikairov's fault. And move the time slot around in Book 2, air the second half of Avatar on Wind 1 week. I think this is worse than all of those. This is the worst one. And, of course, the second biggest one is airing Book 3 on television a week after you announce its premiere date. That was the previous worst one. This is the new worst one. And I see no reason to support them. I don't think you are under any obligation to watch the episodes on Nick.com. Feel free to go to a different website. There's no reason to give them revenue. They have mistreated this show, I would say, to an extent which is almost unprecedented in television history. Usually, shows that are treated this badly are canceled after the first season. This is really rare.
Beating a dead horse.
It's really rare that you get the show. It's lasted for 4 seasons and has had this much bad treatment. I think it might be the most unprecedented case. So they just obviously don't know what they're doing. They're a very fractured company, as I've wrote about in the past, that is not communicating well between departments, has different visions for their shows between scheduling, show creation, their animation studios, and their New York offices. It's not a company that I would want to invest emotional energy into, like
if I was an investor, I would not be putting my money into a company that doesn't communicate and clearly cannot.
Well, they're losing money.
Make television work. This is your product. This is like if you were Sony and all your televisions didn't turn on, or they were all
I don't know if that's a good
tricolor.
But
I mean.
But yeah, you know, it's a good point. Like, I mean, and Nick is somewhat in trouble financially, although they are still one of the most popular cable networks. Their ratings are on a long-term scale have been in a serious decline. But I don't know if that's as much of a problem personally as it is the show's treatment, right? Like, so I don't plan on supporting any of their shows in the future. I don't see a reason to support them with Korra. Also, you might be like, what? Don't watch the episodes on Nickelodeon? That negatively affects Mike and Brian. No, it doesn't. Mike and Brian aren't receiving the revenue that's on Nick.com that goes to Nick. It is possible that Mike and Brian get a cut of DVD sales. That I'm not sure about. So you might still want to buy the DVDs. But that's it. Like, there's no reason to support the show. They're going to put the last episodes out anyway. Then Avatar's done on Nick. So there you go, I guess. Any other thoughts on this?
No, I think you covered everything.
Yeah.
Right.
And I felt this way like before. Like this didn't. I stopped caring about Nick before this happened.
I also did. Like, I feel like you could have reasonably had this attitude beforehand, but I also think this is like
this is the last straw.
It's
this
funny
is
because
it.
It's funny because book three, episode eight, we got the news that it was going online and Brian had to make a Tumblr post explaining everything. And then book four, episode eight, we got this and he had to make another post.
Like, yeah, so this is, I mean,
how
obviously.
How ridiculous is that? You have to have the creator explain
the fact that
a television show on a major network.
They should, Nick should have explained
this. That's
true.
Embarrassed.
Nick should communicate with fans better. Like, it's interesting because you look at Nick's PR response to this. And before the episode, one of their tweets was, Korra fans, is Masami coming back next episode? Oh, you'll have to watch to find out.
Are you serious? Is that a tweet?
No, that was what they tweeted. So I find that very...
Oh my God.
There were two tweets. They had different pictures. I thought there were two tweets.
I don't know
ridiculous.
If they were. As someone who also troll ships Masami, I find that funny. But it's not funny. It's not funny. Genuinely ships Masami. It's not funny that they didn't say it was a clips episode. They didn't explain why it was happening. Rather, they jokingly tricked fans, like potentially young fans who follow their Twitter. That's not very good. That being said, the person who runs Nick's Twitter is not the same as the Nick higher up. So I wouldn't take all your wrath out on them.
The
excessive amount of smiley faces is an indicator.
So yeah, I mean, this is just terrible. Obviously, the decision on this was a year and a half ago. It's not like this is groundbreaking news. We just didn't know about it. But yeah, watch the episodes however you want to. I mean, it should just be noted. It sucks that the only way to watch them when they actually first come out at 3 a.m. is by giving Nick money. Well, actually, they go. People will put them up other places, but that's not. It's as quick, I guess. Whatever. Do what you want. It's no obligation to support Nickelodeon. Yeah, but I guess that's the rant, and we can get to two remembrances. This is not going to be the stereotypical episode discussion because this episode is mostly clips from old episodes. I don't know how much there is to discuss in terms of it being a quality or not quality episode of television. I think it's unfair to compare this to previous episodes given their constraints. That being said, it is fair to call it a bad episode, right? Like Brian said that on Tumblr, he said that I think we created a really clever so Brian says Korra's remembrances serve the same function as Umbrella and Players. I'll be with old footage instead of newly animated play. There's 5 minutes of new footage and some chibi heads to spice things up.
Enjoy the chippy head.
What started out as a reluctant chore ended up being a really fun episode to make, and in the end, I truly love it. So he says,
I don't think it's comparable to Ember. Like, obviously, he's a creator. But for me, it's not comparable to Ember.
Right. So you were allowed to criticize this, Brian, Mike, and Brian. You could say they did the best job they could.
Yeah.
They did a really good job considering. But that being said, Acts 1 and 2 are still mostly a stereotypical clips episode. So I think there's a lot to criticize in those ones. That being said, Act 3 is super creative. And
it's really hilarious.
It's so great. Oh my God. Amazing.
And anyway, quickly setting it up. Remembrances written by Josh Hamilton, Tim Edrick, and Katie Mantilla. Directed by Mike, which is very notable Mike just doesn't direct episodes or isn't involved in this process. I mean, there wasn't a lot to direct here, but it's interesting that he was involved in the storyboarding process too. Storyboarded by Joaquim, Ryu, Lauren, and Mike. These are the creative heads of the show. These are not the storyboarders who work on those typical episodes. So like basically how I envisioned the process was that they were working on this on top of also supervising the other quote unquote real episodes of the season. The storyboarders never like took a break like to work on this or something. So this was kind of like worked on the side, it kind of seems like, you know. Which is unfortunate, but at the same time, obviously some great talent storyboarding as you have. Joaquim, Rhea, and Lauren, like that's great. But yeah, let's get to us. Just let me know. Let's go around the horn. Let me know whether you enjoyed this or not, and I guess which specific parts. Let's start with Britt.
Let's see. The first part was kind of, I mean, it was fun to hear people like make fun of Mako, but Mako was dumb in this episode. I got to see the Masami scenes again. That's cute. And yeah, that's kind of it. The Korra scenes were cute. They were good. They were there. The Korrasami was nice. Tenzin was there. character growth, yay. The last part, though, was the best. I regret trying to watch it in a quiet library because I almost burst out laughing and annoyed a bunch of people. So, yeah,
nice. I would keep doing this. Don't
yeah,
watch
you
it
keep
in
watching
library.
In the library.
Place where I usually watch
this happens every
was full.
Week.
Delaney, what do you think?
Well, I really enjoyed the episode. I watched it at 4 a.m., so that might have been an indicator of like no sleep. But I really enjoyed it. It was so funny, and I even like now Mare's gonna attack me later. But I really enjoyed the first part because it's like. This episode is reasons why Mako is terrible, explained by Mako, and then everyone around him going, Mako, you suck. I loved it. It was great.
There was a lot of Mako, you suck from the other characters. Yeah.
I enjoyed that. And then, of course, and it really was just, of course, I didn't enjoy the part where obviously Mako hasn't actually grown from it and is like, eh, like he's just kind of like whines about it. But the Kurosami, yes, good, great, fantastic. And. The villains were the best part. The fact that Vatu was in it killed me. That was the line about him being the evilest, like, scariest kite that ever flew. I was crying. I was laughing so hard. And then Zombie-Amon, everything. The villains, like, however long sequence of the villains on their four-way chat was beautiful. And all I could think of was Mean Girls. I really enjoyed this episode. And going back to what you said about it, like, knowing it was a clip episode going in, I mean, I don't really want to say that changed my mindset going into it. I think I would have enjoyed it either way because it was just so funny. But I guess I did kind of go into the episode with, like, a little bit more of a, well, let's just see, you know, like, let's have fun with this.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the let's have fun with this was kind of helpful. It about the Vatu kite line. How generalized is the calling Vatu and Rava a kite in the fandom? Like, or is that's kind of a trademark the us thing, right?
Yeah,
I feel like it's granted they're very obviously kites. So I'm sure they were. Mike and Brian were like they're kites. Like, I mean.
So,
maybe one of the, like the directors has listened to us like once.
Well, I'm aware to my. Okay, that I won't talk. Mike and Brian
have
Mike and Brian are at least aware of us and have probably listened at one point. I've been told. Anyway, Merritt, what'd you think?
I thought this episode was adorable. I laughed really hard and I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. Like, I was going into it open-minded, but I enjoyed it far more than I thought I would. The Makora was real. It was totally real.
Was it real? We'll get into it.
We'll get into it.
No, I
okay.
have many thoughts on this.
But, I felt like I loved how the episode seemed to be poking fun at the fandom, even with like the Makora stuff, and then at the end, like with Varric saying like it's just a maver, don't overthink it. I thought that was really clever. Probably my favorite part, though, like the favorite two parts, was Mako at the end of his Act One, and then the conference call. That was amazing. And the stuff with Korra was nice, but I think that they could have done a little bit better with it. That was probably my least favorite act when it probably should have been my first favorite. But yeah, I really enjoyed this episode.
Nice. I guess we're going to be pretty positive on this. I think, I mean, without the Mako favoring character attitude, I mean, Act One was not interesting at all to me, you know, from my perspective.
Oh my gosh, I loved it.
It was just very. I don't care about Mako's perspective.
I enjoyed
what
it
happened.
From an anti-Mako perspective.
I enjoyed it
care.
From a Wu perspective.
Okay, that's true. Wu was pretty good.
Wu was meant to be the fandom.
Yes, and
Wu is the fandom.
Act Two, despite featuring Korra and Asami talking, I did not find very exciting. It was just mostly clips and not that much of an interesting perspective. However, during Act One, it was very notable that they lampshaded the lack of a breakup in Book One of Korra.
And I totally called that yesterday. I totally called that.
It makes sense. Like, Brian's expressed that on commentaries before, so they would do that. Yeah. It was very good. I'm totally in favor of them lampshading whenever they can. Lampshading is referring to themselves and things they've done, and generally you, like, lampshade a trope, which is, like, you point out that something's happening that always happens, but you can also, like, shine a light over something they've done in the past, right? Something like that. But Act 3 featured some extremely creative just reusing of old footage, and I think probably the funniest moment in Korra history with the villains conference call, I would say. Like, that's just, it was so hilarious.
Can we talk about how someone storyboarded So what should we do for three? And like, how would he get in contact with Raja? He's in the tree. Call him on the phone.
That was so great.
I wonder if they storyboarded those type of scenes, because those are obviously old footage, and they just like draw phones on top of them, right? So I guess they kind of had to.
There's just a drop phone button, and they just tap it, and there's suddenly a phone.
I heard the phone ringing, and I'm like, I looked away from my computer for a second, and then I heard the phone ring, and I'm like, what the crap?
I'm glad I caught you at home. Like, oh my god.
Like, I feel like, so what I would have wanted from this entire episode is what happens in Act 3, which is creative use of old footage, not just telling what happened in the past, and also drawing on top of old footage. That's such a good idea. Like, they did that with the villains conference call. They also did that with Jinora giving her wings, and they gave it with Giant Korra. They superimposed Bolin's face on it. So they did it. They did it several times, and that was so creative. Why didn't they do that for the rest of it and just make this some crazy episode? Like, who cares? Like, maybe they're trying to set up some stuff that's going to happen in the last five episodes, right? But I don't care about that. Like, that's not, they're doing that through old clips. It's not really going to be that effective, no matter what. So I really would have liked if they'd done what they did for Act 3 throughout the rest of them. Obviously, Act 3 is going to be more difficult to make than the rest of them. Maybe they didn't have time. But if this was going to be a legitimate, really good episode that the fans would have loved, it would have been all Act 3. Instead, I think this is going to be looked at as a extremely forgettable episode that just so happened to feature a few great moments, is what I would say.
It just kind of happened, and it was a thing, but...
Overall, I did, I don't know if I overall enjoyed it or not, right? Like, I only liked one third of it, so, but that one third was so good, so it's kind of tricky. Yeah. So, we'll get into, you know, as many specifics as you can get into for this type of,
Considering we've already podcasted on many of these moments.
Yeah, we won't. We're probably not even going to be talking about the recap scenes. Like, it's mostly just the commentary, the commentary over the scenes, and like the chivy heads and stuff like that. We're going to be going from memory for Act 1, so excuse us if we forget stuff. I have more detailed for Acts 2 and 3.
Oh, Meredith will help.
Meredith will help, yes. So basically...
she has committed
more. So as I remember, we start... No, we do. We start with the clip from... So again, there's 5 minutes of actual new footage, so we're going to try to focus on those more. The clip from last week, the first 90 seconds, I guess, Mako and Wu, and Wu's being like, Wu says he's such a wimp or whatever. I don't know, does Mako call him like a name or something? I don't remember.
He just says, Wu down's your catchphrase.
Yeah, Wu down's your catchphrase. Oh, he says you're weak, but yeah. So, just from a like a anti-generals perspective, it does annoy me that Wu needs to be like, trained to stop being so weak or incompetent or whatever. Like, I don't love that just because he's male. He needs to be like, fight with Mako or whatever. But Mako in general doesn't really criticize him for that.
And the self-defense part makes sense because Mako has failed at being a bodyguard. And
yeah, this is like Mako making up for his failed duties.
Yeah, this is Mako making up for the fact that he pretty much almost got Wu killed. Like, good job, Mako.
That seems to be what that is. I love... Grandma Yin coming in again and loving.
Oh my gosh, I love her. Bless her.
She's really
I'm
great.
Not,
yeah.
I am still not prepared. Like, I can't handle Wu and Grandma Yin at the same time. Like, my brain just stops processing. It's so great.
That's not good. You should get that checked out. It stops processing.
Oh, yeah, I'll go anyway.
Also, there is whatever his name is. Two. Yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
He's pretty good too. Him
I
with
like
the
him when they high fived. That was
I like how he comes in with like a Slurpee. Like, what are you doing?
It's clearly a movie.
Anyway, they go through clips throughout book one, and it's like...
We gotta talk about this.
Wu's like, okay, so they're like, oh, I met Korra, and Wu's like, oh, and then you smooched her, right? And then Mako's like...
You smooched her real good.
You smooched her real good. And then Mako's like, not exactly, and then we get into the Masami clips, which were better.
Slow down.
We're leaving out all the really awful dialogue about pro-bending.
Oh, like, yeah, whatever.
That was bad.
Also, Mako talked just really unnatural. Like, his line was like, me and I started out dirt poor. It's like this, and his line was just very unnatural.
And everything changed when he met Korra. Like,
yes,
totally
he did say that. Also, Bolin said that.
Yes.
Okay.
This episode is Korra changed everyone's lives. Like, that was this episode. That was the thing.
I mean, point out any other... I feel like all the notable Mako commentary comes after the Masami stuff, right? Is there anything else before?
Not particularly.
Yeah,
it's just like recap. Yeah, like man.
This is also I think the longest act of the.
Yeah, it is. I've done checked that.
Okay. Noted. You done checked that. Okay. So there's what Mara. What do you think of seeing all the Masami scenes again? Not Mara, Britt. No, Britt. The Masami expert. Come on.
pretty cute. Mako is stupid.
We did get to see the most notable scene of book one, the boil it yourself scene, except we didn't see hear the line boil it yourself
she
again.
She didn't say it. I was upset.
No, it would happened after. This was the stuff that happened after that line, yeah.
I love when my baby stands up for herself and tells her man to frickin' boil it himself. And he just needs to put on his big boy pants, which if he was with the Sami, he would do, but...
Commentary on the old episodes. But... Okay, so...
And then after,
you know, he's never
parts...
actually just... I don't have any good arguments. This is just dumb.
Yeah, there's
just
no
shipper.
Good
argument.
Mako just is terrible at relationships. So, that's
okay,
what the show
listen, though.
Yes.
I have been saying this since freaking 2012, and they put it into, like, commentary right here. And Mako says, but my feelings for Korra became clear when Tarlok captured her. It felt like a piece of me was gone. Like, I have been saying that for 2 years, and it was so wonderful.
Thumbs up.
Except he was dating Asami.
Yeah. You know, that,
that's the whole
so
issue.
So then they
like,
say,
I don't care if
your
he
feelings.
Likes Korra.
So then they like play the supposed breakup scene and they comment on how
that was great.
How it was like, this is supposed to be a breakup. Bit. Yeah. And then later, we're not there yet, but later they have the Masami in the sting and Wu's like, and Mako's like, this, you're gonna say this is bad too, right? And then Wu's like, no, you guys were broken up at this point. So it's perfectly fine. So yeah, Wu definitely being the voice of the fandom there.
Yeah. It cracks me up that Wu's commentary, even though, like, he's like the fandom, but it's like, Wu, you know nothing. This is great.
Also, like, this is like, there's so many lines in here. There's a few lines in here which I feel like I guess other people in the fandom said them, but this is like, this is straight from us, right? It's perfectly fine because they're broken up now in the sting. That's like what we said on that podcast, right? So
yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
are these directed at us? I'm not sure, but yes, I agree with
they're
you.
They're telling us, shut up, that we're broken up.
But and then we get the painful.
Then he says, Korra and I ended up stopping him on together, and after that, I was finally able to tell her how I felt, exactly how I felt.
Yes, and for the book one finale, yeah.
Yeah.
And we get into book two, and we have to relive the painful Korra coming back with her memory wiped to Mako scene.
That was
a
painful episode. Did you see Asami's face? Masami died.
I know.
That was even more painful in the flashback. Like, why did we need to see that? I don't want to see that again.
Of course, how they leave Asami. Like, yeah, Asami talks in this episode, but we don't get to hear Asami talk about how Korra has changed her life.
No. Yeah, I know, right?
It drives me nuts.
What,
I'd rather listen to Asami talk about Masami and Korra Asami than Mako talk about... We should have had the entire thing from Wu's perspective.
That should have been, yeah, because he should have like read about it and told us his like recap. Yeah,
we should have discovered Mako's diary.
Yeah, exactly.
Like instead of
oh my gosh, that would have been amazing.
Which he definitely writes. Oh well, he rewrote it in the stakeout. We know he has.
Yeah,
a diary.
He has his
yeah.
little book. Yeah, no, he has a diary.
Oh, I wanted to start that meme. We never started that meme though. Mako's diary. Yeah, that needs to be a thing. Anyway, what else do they give us from book two?
They told us that he enjoyed the stakeout because it got his mind off of Korra. And then what else happened? He ended up not getting back together with Asami, and then Korra came back.
Yeah. And then that painful.
The quote's somewhere, but
the quote is somewhere. And then
they made out in your apartment. That means whatever.
And then they.
Mako needs to do words.
Words. I mean, he narrates this part. That's words.
What I like about this is that Mako is like, yeah, he's characterized like he doesn't know, but then everyone around him's like, bro.
Just like your grandfather.
Like, we needed to have this. Like, I've
been like
waiting since ever for this to happen. Like, I'm
and then what do they show from book three? They show the reunion hug, right? At the very least.
No, they show the hug from Enter the Void.
Yeah. Okay, one of the hugs. Wait, Enter the Void. Yeah.
Enter the Void. And they say that Mako, like, it was awkward at first, but he was finally able to see that he could function, like, without having a lady in his life, and him and Korra rescued, like, saved everybody, like, by being friends.
Yeah, and they said that they showed the hug, and I think they said their friends line right over, which is interesting, because I think most of the fandom, like, including me, interpreted that hug as somewhat romantic on Mako's end, but then they just straight up said friends over it. So that's an interesting, I think that's the most.
Yeah, I thought of that too, like, but.
I think that's the most anti, that's the most anti-Makora part of this, right? Like.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. And,
I think it comes out at the end of pretty, Mako's like, yep, I'm glad it's just me.
Well, it's not clear where they end up, because they kind of happens really fast, going through book three, and then it stops the recaps. And either way, it does not end with Mako. It ends with Mako at some point says that
whenever I think of her, she continues to inspire me.
Yeah, continues to inspire me, which is obviously strong feelings. But not clearly romantic.
Yeah.
So it's not.
I think they're going somewhere with that.
But I think they're going to go somewhere with that romantic.
It's interesting. It could go somewhere just because of that line, or that line could be like a closure part.
That's what I thought. It was a closure. Like to me, this episode is fine. Like Makora, to me, I don't think there's Makora. This episode to me is Makora. No.
This episode's telling me. If we didn't know that we were getting the field trip next episode, I would be more likely to believe that. But I think this is leading into them having another scene, which will either build something up more or close it out, right? So
they didn't fully close like the letters last episode, and then they have this episode, and then we know that they're going on a field trip.
I wonder if
it could have a resolution next episode, but it could also happen next.
That's
episode.
What I'm saying, right?
And you're like shutting her down. Like,
well, no, the letters. I'm not convinced they're going to bring the letters up again, right? Like, I don't know. Like, do we have time for that? We need to get. It's more important probably to talk about Korra's mental state.
If they brought
Mako
it up, like, I could see it, like, on the way to wherever they're going, they're just talking, like.
Could be, yeah. I think it's a reasonable interpretation to view this first act of the recaps. Now, this is not, like, a plot thing, so it's maybe this is none of what they say in here is important at all, but theoretically they're going to try to set something up of what they're doing in the later ones. I think it's reasonable to view it, given the friends and don't need a lady in my life, as this being a very strong indicator of there not being a romantic ending for Korra in the finale. I think it's very reasonable to assume that, because we have 5 episodes left and she's not with anyone, there's no hints of her being with anyone, and we just had it kind of...
And we have no time for this.
We had no time, and we have what could be interpreted as a closure.
I want an open-ended, I think
that it will be very foreshadowed Makora, but I think it will happen, like, at the very end.
So I guess whenever, I mean, the end, like, they could do whatever they want in an epilogue, right? So that's the thing. Yeah. You can't predict the epilogue, right? They could just pull Harry Potter and have put anyone together. I don't think they're going to do that, but they could.
I wouldn't be as unhappy as I thought I would be. Like, I would be like, okay, whatever, and I would just accept whatever happened. No matter how crazy
it was. They're obviously, like, there's so literally 5 episodes left. If they're going to put Makora in before the epilogue, we previously said it needs to happen now, it needs to happen soon. I think we're probably past the point of there being an appropriately built up, overtly romantic Makora ending, or any other Korra ship, overtly romantic at the end. So I have a theory,
but we'll talk about it when we talk about, like, speculation.
Okay. But I think we're past that point. I don't know. I think that's a fair thing to say. I think we still could have subtle anything, but I think we're past the point of an overtly romantic ending for Korra.
I definitely agree.
Act 2.
Like, the point passed.
The point is passed, yes. Act 2 we have is hashtag Gorosami, and we are at Air Temple Island, presumably.
And Asami brought the tea. I was so, like...
So, Brian, with his post, posted the picture of, like, Asami's hands out and Korra, like, having tea in her hands, and the big question is, who's giving who the tea, right? But it's,
you know, like,
Asami
had her hand out,
and
it's like, I don't know, is she giving it to
her? Is she receiving or giving?
It?
Yeah, that was the big speculation by Delaney last night.
I was on top of it last night.
But as most probably likely, Asami was bringing Korra tea, and she does so, and then Korra says, "You're so sweet."
My heart.
No, I will say this.
Not just from a Korosami perspective, but that is this has shown a lot of, like, this is not something book 1 Korra would have said, or book 2 Korra, or maybe even book 3 Korra. Like, this is such a, like, I can't believe Korra said that, and it's wonderful.
I think book 3 Korra would have said that to Asami.
Well,
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't, like, to me, I was just like, what?
Korra's just so, like, much more subdued in general, right? Like, yeah.
Yes.
As is blatantly said by Tenzin. Tenzin's lines are so good. Oh my god.
Tenzin needs.
I will say this, despite us saying, oh, Korosami, Korosami, I think this scene, the natural interpretation of all the Mako lines in the previous book were not him having feelings. The natural interpretation of this Korosami scene is not overly romantic or romantic in any sense, right? I don't think the You're So Sweet is overly romantic, unlike the blushed last episode. I think that was. So Korra's been thinking.
You're So Sweet just struck me as, like, straight. Like, I was just shocked that Korra.
It was
said
just really nice, and yeah.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And she's so cute. Yeah,
it was very. I don't want to say platonic, but it was just, like, you know, something kind to say.
We could, yeah. We should point out the similarities between this and the Cat Aang balcony scene. That they look very similar.
Also, there was a sunset.
Another thing I was analyzing.
They do in terms of, not in terms of, a little bit in terms of content too, but in terms of the shot and where they're putting them. Like,
and
this
there's
is
tea,
this, and like, there's tea. This is obviously not a intentional parallel. Like, I mean, it could be, but it's obviously not. Like,
it's definitely intentional.
Oh yeah, okay.
I'm just
correcting. Okay, it's intentional. Okay, Korra's been thinking that Toph said the world doesn't need her. The world seems to always be out of balance, says Korra, and then that brings on Korra's point of view flashbacks. She couldn't wait to be the Avatar. She's terrified of the Mon.
So sad for Korra.
Yeah, and then Asami's like, but you're forgetting all the good, the Equalist movement. This is another instance of them inserting through the commentary things they didn't state in the actual show. Asami says, Equalist movement lost its leader and its power. Free elections were held in United Republic, and non-benders finally had a voice. People had hope again, and it was all because of you.
Why couldn't have Asami said something about her? I kept waiting for Asami to be like, you know, like, you know, you're important to me, or like,
and
not even just from a shipping perspective, from like a best friend perspective.
No, that's true. Asami is
like,
very
honestly,
neutral.
Like, that's
yeah.
like I was really expecting that. Yeah. Like, best friends, that's a thing you do.
People had hope again, and so did I. Yeah, something
yeah,
like that.
I needed you know? That. Like, I need, yeah. like it didn't.
No,
happen.
It's a valid. It's a valid view. This scene isn't very emotional because it's just very like,
yeah.
very. Lens bat. Well, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, from a broader perspective, there's not much emotional connection between Korra and Asami here, other than you're so sweet, which is also said kind of neutrally. So you know,
yes.
But new enemies. But there's always new enemies. Says, or there's a new enemy. Says Korra. Then we get to see. I don't know why they choose this out of everything. We see the new spiritual age, the Jinora and Unalaq in the spirit world. And
yeah, I thought that was a really
and
scene.
Yeah, I absolutely hate the scene, and I'm glad I got to see it again. Thank you so much. Korra says it was her fault for the Unalaq stuff, helpless to stop as her past lives were her connection was destroyed.
Why do they keep doing this?
That was terrible. They like were all disappearing, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I like didn't even pay attention to this part of
the I would say one of the most likely things to happen. We have no idea what's going to happen beyond next episode and the trailer stuff finishing. I would say one of the most likely things to happen is that Korra gets her past lives back.
The past lives better come back.
I think that just seems very likely. Asami says opening the portals was a good thing. You brought back the airbenders and caused a positive shift in the world. But Korra's like, but also Zaheer came back, and it went for Zaheer, the Earth Queen would be alive. No, and there wouldn't be
Kuzira.
I just
imagine Asami about
how did Asami
like,
know that? I guess she just was told. She's
big on the. She reads up on the news. She's the lady of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Pretty sure. That Asami was
the portals.
No,
yeah.
She wasn't ever.
Also, the portals are not. They didn't. The portals are not the cause of the airbenders coming.
Yeah.
Like, what? They've been very inconsistent with this. They originally said, oh, it was harmonic convergence. But harmonic convergence happened before the portals were open. Okay, I guess originally the portals were open. And so that caused harmonic convergence. But wait, did it? Oh, who cares about book? Oh, who cares about book two mythology?
It's
going to
happen regardless of the portals, because harmonic convergence is a thing.
I just so don't care about harmonic convergence. I don't care. Yeah, I think it would have
happened. No one cares about harmonic convergence. It was really a stupid plot point.
Yeah, as they lampshade later. I think it would have happened.
Literally, the entire finale made no sense.
As they lampshade later.
As they make fun of in the entire.
I think that harmonic convergence would have happened anyway. Okay, wow, okay. Like, good consistency. I don't know. Maybe you guys have thoughts on this, but I don't care. Now we get Tenzin's horrible dialogue. The horrible line of the week
Tenzin
is everything Tenzin. Everything Tenzin
not
says
talking.
Is just so blunt and emotionless and very factual in a bad way. Tenzin says
he didn't need to be there.
There will always be new enemies. Learn from the enemies and better yourself over time. First, when you were first here, you're hot-headed and kind of selfish, and now you've matured, sacrificed everything to save the Airbenders, inspiration to the world. Korra says no matter what happens, no matter how crazy things get, I'll always try to restore balance.
I don't think she was selfish ever.
What? I think she was. I think.
I mean it.
No, I think she was selfish. Like you can.
I think it's selfish in a childish way.
It's very
not necessarily
yeah.
like in a very like ang- like not in a like cruel way or like intentional way, but just like she was very immature.
I agree,
very
but
childish
like
you're
way.
The most loyal, brave, and selfless person I know.
Yeah, that's true. That contradicts that line. Fallen, great. No.
Well, they're all well. The argument can be made that they're all.
I have every Macora line memorized.
So
we can tell. Yes, good job.
So
it's pretty impressive.
I
actually.
Think it's hard not to interpret Korra's actions in K-105 as not selfish. They're clearly selfish. Selfish
yes.
for understandable reasons, but they are clearly selfish. Anyway, what do I want to say on this? when. Oh, so
this
I think
like
they. I think they continue to not understand that it wasn't overt. This wasn't Korra saying she was going to sacrifice herself, and then that just not mattering in 5 minutes in the book three finale. I think they think that was a bigger deal than it was. I don't think that left an impression on a lasting impression on the audience. I don't think it was a very big plot point because it was immediately contradicted. They continue to bring it up. And it was a big character moment for Korra, but it was not big in the plot and was easily forgotten, and I think that was a mistake in the book three finale.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
To be honest, they keep saying she saved the airbenders. Yes, she did that. She's the reason the airbenders are back. But for me to watch this, especially in the scope of having watched Avatar and the other two seasons of Korra, to me, this isn't just, she saved the world. Like, she saved the world from Zaheer. So, like, when they keep bringing up the airbenders, like, yes, that's what she did, and, like, I'm emotionally attached to that, but, like...
No, airbenders are more important, obviously.
But you know what I mean? Like, to me, it's not just about the airbenders.
Also, this was Tenzin saying this, so he was trying to say it from, like, a personal perspective.
Yeah,
but he was saying it so emotionlessly.
It's because Tenzin was, like, robot. This
like seriously, J.K. Simmons is so frustrating sometimes, which is, it's like, he's, like, he might win an Oscar this year, like, for supporting actor. Like, he's about to become a very big deal in the news, but like this line was just so emotionless. He could have said it with some sort of thing. I don't know, it was just a bad line too, though. So, you know, anyway, continuing on, we see a great sunset too. Act three, aka
another throwback to the Katang.
Now it's the series finale, like they kissed and then it cut to sunset. Yes. That's what happened, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
can I say one more thing that might be like look down upon, kind of.
Okay, we might. We reserve the right to look down upon it, but okay.
Okay. Like, I felt like in X 1 and 2, I liked how Mako referred to Korra as Korra. Like, and Asami kept referring to her as the Avatar. Like, I don't think Asami intentionally did that, but I think that was something to look at. I don't know.
I actually like completely understand what you're saying. Like, I've been during Avatar, I was really frustrated when people kept referring to Aang as the Avatar. Like, that really annoys me because it's like it's not the Avatar, he's Aang, right? Like, and then I don't know. I can't remember. Like, I can't remember the Katang that happened with this, but it was something involving that. And I think they're very inconsistent with the Avatar and Korra. And I don't know if Asami.
I don't think it was intentional.
She said you're the Avatar, right? Like that it was a point of saying the world needed her, and obviously
wasn't,
that wasn't a great line.
It was relevant to the discussion that of talking to like her as the Avatar. And another they're very inconsistent with Asami and Korra as friends anyway. Like this is another example of it just really irritated me. Like can we like
I
can only make noises. It's just so irritating.
Isn't that a normal state though?
I
agree though.
It was just something that I pointed out.
No, I actually agree though.
I think
Mako calling her Korra constantly is a very good sign that he sees her like clearly as a person and stuff. And I mean he should never call her the Avatar, but he's gonna say something like she inspires me so much, then he should definitely be calling her Korra. So I think that was well done in that regard, I guess. Act three.
Something had to be.
Act three was well done, so let's talk about that.
Yes.
So I'm just going to rush through this, I guess. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
So much
good
stuff.
we're gonna stop on the big ones, but okay. I basically put down everything that happened in Act 3. Varric says he spent 2 hours composing the greatest story ever told after there's some weird story from the guy who's voiced by Steve Blum. I can't remember his name.
He talked about eating bark.
Yeah, like,
I
okay.
He had the day. Like, he knew, like, it made no sense.
Like, yeah, oh yeah, it was like 3 years,
was
6 months,
like,
and two,
and like,
2 days,
this
yeah.
Is really bad transition into this boat. Like,
it was
like,
kind of
whoa.
Funny. I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny. It's soon to become the greatest mover ever made. Bolin as Nuk-Tuk, hero of the South, a trademark of Vereboovers, international in the incredible true story of... Varric Movers International in the incredible true story of Bolin, hero of the world. So I don't know. This concept is them going back to book two and then reversing it, which I guess is good. They think that the Nuk-Tuk stuff in book two is better than it was, but this is still clever, I guess. Bolin says, no, I suck. And Varric says, you're emphasizing the wrong story beats. Which is probably lampshading on its own, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so Varric says, the story of Bolin begins in an exotic port of call. A wise sage, the richest merchant in the world, and a handsome devil all sit on a single pillow in the living room of a luxury yacht. How do they all fit on the same pillow? Not with the cute sneeze. Bless you. A giant pillow. Wrong. They're all the same man. Me.
That was great. That's a very good job.
That was beautiful.
I originally wasn't going to quote that entirely, but that was too good.
It's such a good quote.
Bolin has rapturous song, and then Bolin's like, "No, that's none of that happened." And also Asami is just a friend. Thank you very much.
I like that line.
This is like, why can't we get the Balsami guys? Come on, like, why isn't it happening?
At this point, I would ship Balsami.
Just because.
Just let it happen. I would ship anything, okay? Like,
yeah. We get some serious Bopal, so we'll talk about that.
The Bopal made everything worth it.
Bolin, the true story starts from when I met Cor, and I thought, oh no, we're going to do this again. And then boring. Okay, and then they get back to awesome stuff. I love that, yeah.
Because Varric's like, no,
yeah, this, we're not going to do that dumb, boring Mako thing again. The villains team up, led by Zaheer. He's joined by Vatu, the biggest, meanest, scariest kite that ever flew.
I cried. I love Vatu. First of all, the only way to make an episode or anything better is you put Vatu in it, and then that line just catapulted it into.
Oh my god, so amazing. Good, so good.
Like, I can't. I think Vatu had a telephone.
The first half of the episode, and they were just trying to be serious, and then by the end, they were just like, just screw it, let's just do something ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't tell how they figured out how they're going to structure
Vatu's
this.
And Vatu's little like spirit arms are holding a phone, and I just couldn't.
I can't believe they called him a kite. That's so good.
So good. Like, this is like a Christmas present. They called Vatu a kite. Like, I can't.
We've been calling him a kite for so long.
And he is a kite.
And he is.
Finally, someone agreed with us.
So I'd say they agree. It's true, though.
The funny thing is, like, Varric saw this all from his prison cell, and he was like, you a kite. Like,
yeah, I guess so. Like, that's how you do it. That's
so great.
That's true. Very Zaheer and
oh my god, were there pictures of, what if there were pictures of Vatu in the newspaper? Like,
the kite.
That's
like,
a really good
concept. There was
concept,
like a sketch.
Yeah.
This is who almost
they, like,
killed
they
us
had
all.
A sketch of him, and it was just the guy flying a kite. Yeah, that was the sketch of
yes.
Vatu in Republic City. Yes. So anyways, Zaheer and Vatu's call. Zaheer says, glad I caught you at home. Vatu says, very funny, like I could leave the stupid tree.
Like, the fact that he calls it such like a stupid tree.
So good.
Like, and we made fun of, like, it's like, the tree is stupid.
It
like,
is stupid.
We made fun of it, like, it's so stupid.
So good. What is Zaheer's voice? Like, I guess this is Henry Rollins, but it's so weird.
Was that actually his actor?
I need to check. Okay, I'll check this as we keep going.
I couldn't tell.
Like, laughing weird, and it was said weird. If it was, and it was done, like, really well, but, like, anyway, that was, I don't know, that call, even before we bring on other people, right?
Yeah,
like, it's still so good. Trying to multitask.
I had to pause the video and just process that there was actually...
Yeah, that was, according to the credits, it was Henry Rollins, so that's so weird. That's who did the funniest voice, yeah. Anyway, then we're going to conference in Amon, the reanimated zombie body.
Zombie Amon. I stopped. I was like, what?
So good.
This is a this has been a joke. Are you serious? Zombie Amon is real.
Zombie Amon, so good. Can and then
like, so many fan fiction authors are like, I called it.
Yes, Zombie Amon. It's true. It's plot point.
And then Amora is gonna happen.
And then it's exactly. Yeah. There's still people shipping
Amora,
by the way.
Dude, the Amora tag is kicking.
It's still. Oh, I can't believe that's still a ship. Anyway, and then they say
it will always be a ship.
It's more active than Kurosami.
No,
ridiculous.
It's not. No, it's not. Kurosami is very active recently. But
no,
like,
except like there's more Amora fix, and I'm like, stop.
And then they say, can we please not include? And then the evil Unuak, the diabolical but incredibly
this is like Mean Girl,
but incredibly boring and unpopular sorcerer from the north. And it's not Unalaq, it's the cartoon version of Unalaq.
Because, like, they had to do cartoon Unalaq because actual Unalaq is even more boring and terrible.
No, cartoon Unalaq's much better.
Eyeliner.
Oh my god. And
no, that's why they had to do the cartoon Unalaq. It was...
They did bring back Adrian Latorelle for this, who I've always, Unalaq, always, I've always said, the worst character ever in Avatar Core History. Adrian Latorelle's always done a good job with him, though. And he's very good as the... As evil Unalaq, I guess. I didn't know he did evil Unalaq as well. But that's much. I mean, maybe they just put the names of the people in the credits, even though they weren't them. But I doubt it. Jonathan Adams as Batu, and Steve Blum was already back for Baraz, so he's also there as Amon. Incredibly, the diabolical but incredibly boring and unpopular sorcerer.
Like, that was a yes. line that they wrote. It was in the show.
He is incredibly boring and unpopular. Yes, I couldn't agree more.
Correct.
You are correct. He is incredibly boring.
They're like, we know,
boring.
Guys, okay? We know. He's boring.
Yes, he is. Just,
season 2 was bad. We tried.
Like I said, the number one ranked worst character of Dark Horse history by me. I doubt they were factoring that in, but yes. Just thank you for destroying Book 2 in this.
Yes.
I mean, they also don't say the good things for Book 2, but they definitely destroy all the bad things. But no, now we have to have a Bolin's Ladies flashback segment. But then we get Chibi Bolin saying, Opal, so smart and caring, so pretty to smell. I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Yeah.
And she'll probably never talk to me again because I'm so stupid, stupid, I'm so stupid. Great line read by PJ Byrne there. So good. How did
he
actually say, like, was that a line in the script, so pretty to smell? Like, am I even getting, like, I'm pretty sure that's what he says. Like, yeah. I went back and listened to it several times.
Maybe she has nice perfume, and he's like, yes, I approve of your smelliness. I have had a guy tell me, you smell nice, and let me tell you, it's not always super flattering.
But did he tell you you're so pretty to smell? That's the thing.
No.
Oh yeah, my goodness.
Everyone needs to go out and attempt, like, guy or girl, doesn't matter. You're so pretty to smell. Like,
it's like my promise of telling
you
someone
have a
you're
boyfriend.
My forever girl.
You should
yeah,
definitely like, call him up right now and be like, you're so pretty,
so
to, smell.
Pretty to smell.
Yes,
like,
right
that,
now.
Boyfriend
you used to
text
a girl when you want nudes.
No, not even people like you
no.
on a date. Tell everyone that they're so pretty to
this
smell.
This is
like,
official dating advice from the podcast.
Well, yes.
Tell them that they're so pretty to smell. Oh my god. Anyway, that's I might be back on board Bopal because of this line from
yes.
from Bolin. So pretty good. I don't know. I still don't like that he's just like I don't need to go on a rant about Bolin with Opal, but like Bolin's just very like he's not like saying that he was wrong with his ethics or morals or whatever. He's just saying that he was being dumb and he didn't realize the real situation. And I don't like that as a resolution to a genuine, they actually had, an ethical conflict. And this isn't really a resolution to that. This is, Bolin, it just wasn't what Bolin thought it was.
It was just typical Bolin's an idiot.
It was just, yeah, it was Bolin's an idiot, not Bolin is changing his perspective. I don't get the impression it's that.
Well, I mean, like, if he was stupid, he's changing his perspective.
Maybe he's less stupid
ethically.
Now.
But, like, how is Bolin going to voice that? Is Bolin? Is he going to go in and have this, like, long monologue?
I would love a heartfelt conversation.
Like,
yes.
No, he's not.
No, I would love that with, That'd with
be
having
great.
It with
You would love it, but it's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Do you think Merrick's line foreshadowed the end?
What do you mean? No, I mean, it's not really, I don't, you can't say it's foreshadowing, but like, I think it's probably likely to happen, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can we talk about how literally everyone in show ships Bopal?
Everyone
Everybody,
really, even Kuvira, even
like Kuvira ships. Bopal.
That's her OTP. She said it was her favorite couple. Yeah, so I think that I think it has to be canon because of that, right?
Yeah.
Except Opal. Except obviously, we should respect Opal's wishes, which is I am Team Opal, and I'm going to support whatever she decides. Okay. Varric says that the villains are the fearsome foursome. No, maybe the evil squared might
evil
be better.
Evil squared is my favorite.
This is very, as Sam told me on chat, this is very much a Sokka moment with naming things going back and forth. Yeah. Okay.
This reminds me of like all the dumb cartoons of all like the stupid villains and they're, it was great.
It was like a Powerpuff Girls villain.
Yes.
Okay.
Or like, What I can't remember the show, but it was like the League of Super Evil.
Yeah,
it's so great.
The actual show fans, all evil, all villains are lemons.
Yes,
yes.
And like League of Super Evil is lose. That is their acronym.
But now we're back to the best scene ever. Although this is only really one line. Anyway, we get who says okay, guys? I think we finally ditched him, Amon.
Yes,
I think Amon says that. Yes, I think we finally
like
ditched
him.
And then Batu comes in. And says, no, not Batu. Unoa comes in and says, "Haha, very funny, guys. I'm still on the line. So about that evil plan to destroy Nuktuk. Hello, anyone there, guys?" And they hang up on him. So good. That's
amazing.
I did not expect to see an episode with the other villains hanging up on on Unalaq, but I'm so happy that we got
and like the fact that it's reanimated Zombiemon.
And it's reanimated Zombiemon too. Yeah, that makes it better. But wait, we still have one more incredible thing to get to. It's not even done yet. But then Opal kisses Bolin, magically passing the airbender power of flight, which is totally something they would do. And Bolin says it's a little unbelievable. And then Varric's like, should it be Terror Square? Should it be the Legion of Darkness? Yes. And he says, we'll put a focus group on it, which is a very Varric line. And great. We have Interplanetary Combination 0 Hour.
That was amazing. I was like, yes.
Like, yes, this is what your dumb harmonic conversion sounds like. Interplanetary combination 0 Hour. Vatu is set free. We see Bolin superimposed on giant Korra, which is done really well. You didn't know.
Because, like, her hair is still there.
Her hair is still there,
So, so we're past the part where, he defeated Sahir, right?
I don't know.
Well, I wanted to say, he taught the airbenders and they defeated Zaheer, and I was mad about that at first because of the Jinora thing, but then we get Jinora.
But then we get Jinora, so it's okay,
And that was so worth it.
So then, it's the Queen of the Fairies. We have Jinora coming down from the Book 2 finale. And yes, those wings were not there in the original, but I was not completely sure, so I went back and checked.
I wasn't either. Like
that could have been there. That line was that scene was so dumb anyway. So no, they put really good fairy wings on her, and it's great. And
I thought it was for a minute. I thought it was like Boomju behind her or something. Fairy wings.
Definitely Toon Gal's new Tumblr avatar because that was her old one. But now you have to put the fairy wings on her, and I think that's canon now. I think she has wings in that scene.
She is queen of
queen of the fairies. I'm going to accept that.
Fan fiction that's like a fairy tale, and she's going to be queen of the fairies, and it's going to be amazing.
Okay, I expect these fanfics, queen of the fairies. Oh my goodness! Fierce. With her help, Bolin turns Unavatu into magic dust and sprays him into the sky, and that's where the stars come from.
So good.
So good.
That's where we get a Night of a Thousand Stars.
Yeah. They finally explain the title.
It finally makes sense.
Yeah. That title. Oh,
it only took this really.
Yeah. So they took this dumb clips episode to get us to explain
it
the title.
Like
that's what it was.
A year and a half.
Yeah. That's what the title meant. And oh my god, so good. And then at the end we get the Steve Blum guy saying it's just a mover. Don't overthink it. It's like a ride. And Varric says, "Never let the truth get in the way of a good story, kid." And that's how they end the episode.
I feel like they were directing that at fandom.
It's interesting because, to me, this is obviously a really dumb thing to try to impose on us. But it's like, I think this is them pointing, or at least this is how I'm going to choose to interpret it. It's them pointing out how dumb their stuff was, and like, this is their attitude, right? It's like, why didn't you guys like the Book 2 finale? Never let the truth get in the way of a good story, kid. But in reality, they're like lampshading it, so they kind of don't believe that. But so, you know, it's complicated. You could interpret that in a number of ways, honestly.
I interpret it as in, we tried, guys, okay? We admit that it didn't happen perfectly. Yes. You know, there was a lot of lampshading.
There is so much lampshading here. Oh my goodness.
It was intense.
The villains conference call, it's like one of my favorite things.
I think this goes up and like, I mean, regardless of like legitimate episode greatest moments, like this is up there.
It's hard to call this legitimate when it was just a static picture on the screen of them.
But it was so good.
Oh.
Definitely some of the most incredible dialogue ever. Of anything ever. It doesn't even matter that it's Korra or Avatar. Of any dialogue ever.
Okay, guys. I think we finally ditched him.
I can't stop thinking of him calling and saying, I'm glad I caught you at home.
That's so good.
No, for me, it's the like creepiest, scariest kite.
The biggest, meanest, scariest kite that ever flew.
That
line's incredible. Glad I caught you at home. Very funny. Like, I could leave the stupid tree is incredible. The diabolical but incredibly boring and unpopular sorcerer is incredible. Okay, guys, I think we finally ditched him is incredible.
Yes.
And the Queen of the Fairies is incredible. Like, those are all just A-plus jokes, and reanimated Zombiemon, Interplanetary Combination 0 Hour. These are all great, so good. So pretty to smell, too. Like, that's just a legitimate bullet line, but that's so good, too. Oh my goodness. Like,
I will say, I think, like, you know, earlier I said that this wasn't really comparable to, like, for me, like, how it functioned and content, it wasn't comparable to Ember Island Players, but entertainment-wise, definitely comparable to Ember Island Players in hilarity.
Like to me, the conference call is this show's Toph Sonic Scream moment from Umbrella and Blazers. Like Big Toph, there, I got a pretty good look at you. I think it's the funniest line from all of Avatar, and I think this is the best line from all of Korra, just the conference call in general. Like, so just so incredible.
Or no honor and the streamers. That's actually
like awesome. I don't know. I think the Toph one's better, but that's also another great one too. Like you would have loved this to just be another Empire Employers. Unfortunately, they could not. I guess the question is this the right? Theoretically, they could have placed the recap episode anywhere in the season. So if they knew about it enough, which it seems like they did, do you guys like it before like the final five plot episodes? You know,
I do.
Yeah,
because, I think it bothers me.
I like it far.
I mean, it was like they did it. I mean, I know this wasn't precisely Ember Island Players, but I mean, I like how they put Ember Island Players right before the finale. And I mean, we know obviously that the last five episodes are going to go flying by. So I mean, I feel like this was the best place to do it, to pick everything back up and not get off track. And I don't know. I don't think it would have worked at the beginning of the season.
Oh, well, definitely. Yeah, definitely not the beginning. And I think for me, like, I will have a better idea of how I think, like, how this fits, like, where it is, like, based on next week's episode.
Yeah.
Because going into the final four episodes, because to me, that is more comparable to what happened with Avatar, because it was the final four episodes.
I kept seeing posts yesterday of people saying that there's so much stuff that they have to do. Why are they doing this? But, like, I mean, we don't know
what they have to do.
Yeah. We don't know.
So one.
I mean, are they just going to defeat Kuvir and that be it? I mean, it wouldn't be an awful ending, but I just feel like I'm still waiting for our giant.
Yeah. Still waiting for that big twist, right? Like, yeah. That being so, like the problem with you saying someone saying, "Oh, there's so much left to do. Why are we putting it here?" is that they knew that when they're planning the season. Like, it's not like, oh, this is in place of a sixth episode. They're still going to have what they're going to have anyway. Now it's just, they're just putting it here before the action stuff started. So I think this is a good place to put it. They've had success with the silly episodes before, the big ones before. Nightmares and Daydreams and Ember Island Players. I know everyone doesn't love Nightmares and Daydreams, but I think it's very great.
I like
Nightmares
and Daydreams are great.
Very, very good.
And based off all the episodes before this one, I do think this is a good placement. I will, like, see after next week. But right now, it seems pretty good.
It seems like, okay, we'll get more into this in a second. But it seems like, basically, where we're going is next episode might be still, we're going to, like, increase the speed. Next episode's still somewhat slow, though. And then from there, it's probably just four episodes of straight plot.
I feel like everyone, except, I guess, Mako and Korra will be in Republic City. Like, I can't see them postponing, unless Bolin and Varric, it's literally the finale is when they finally tell people what's going on. So I'm curious if they will keep holding that off. I feel like they won't. I feel like they will hit Republic City.
Bolin and Varric have been traveling for a while.
We still have seven episodes. I mean, not seven episodes.
It was like, what?
Seven pictures from the trailer we haven't
seen. Yeah, which I think they'll all be from next episode.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay, let's take a break from we're going to finish up the episode discussion. So I don't want to grade this, but I do, I guess, briefly want to say where I would put it if I was going to rank it with the other episodes. So I think if you're going to grade this episode, you need to use your revised scale. I don't think you can grade it on our stereotypical 5 is an average television, 10 is the best television. I think you need to put it like in context of other clip episodes, which I don't want to do. Basically, if I were to grade this on my core episode rankings, I would put it above Peacekeepers, for sure.
Yes.
Probably above Bolt Civil Wars. Like, I might put it
I would put it above the first quarter of...
I would probably put it in the decent tier, like right around the Aftermath and Rebel Spirit, right?
Yeah.
Which is not fair to compare. Those episodes are legitimately, like, more substantial than this, so you can't compare it. But if I was to compare it, that's where I would put it, right?
I mean, substantial, no, but they're entertaining, and entertainment is, like, valuable. Like, it made us laugh. Like, those are genuinely good jokes, and comedy is, you know, television. Comedy is comprehensible. I mean, it was funny.
I think that's a
was
good...
Was it better
no.
than you thought it would be, Dylan?
You felt things, Dylan. You felt, you know, laughter.
The first two acts disappointed me. Like, I will say that. Like, those were more straight-up recap than I was expecting, but I did not expect this third act to be as funny as it was. Definitely not. It's like, they're on their game with this, for sure. I'm not going to say there's nothing good to come out of the first two acts. Like, we had the lampshading of the breakup and stuff like that. So it's like when I rewatch this episode, I'm probably just going to watch the third act, but then I'd be missing the lampshading of the breakup. I'd be missing the nice Chibi interactions. So I don't know. It's kind of tough.
I do not like the Chibi. No. Stop.
I love the Chibi.
Like, no. Because I keep thinking about that, what the mockery they've turned Teen Titans into, and I can't handle it.
It's bad, bad memories, yeah. Okay.
We're not going to discuss
that. But yeah, overall thumbs up from everyone here.
Yes.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed it.
Let's get into your guys' feedback, and then we'll talk about where we're going here in the rest of the season. So we have a voicemail to play from Tato, so let's hope that this one does not get cut off this time. So here you go.
Hi, guys. This is Tato. This clip show was good for what they had to work with. However, Asami still got the short end of the stick. And that is frustrating. She cannot catch a break. Nothing can never be just about her. Or just be mostly about her. Well, at least we have the next couple of episodes as the meat of the season. And let's see where everything heads. And hopefully Batar Jr. dies. Okay, bye.
Did you catch that at the end? Did you catch that at the end? Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. Asami, not much to do here other than give Korra tea and comment on how you're the Avatar.
Yes.
That's good. All she did.
Like, okay.
We need more Asami. It's interesting. Yes. Like, are we going anywhere with Hiroshi?
I cared more about Asami, but I don't. Like, I'm sorry.
Like, that's how I feel about Mako, except I also don't wish I cared more. Okay, that was mean. Okay. Anyway, continuing. That's how I feel about Bolin.
Like, it's a legitimate issue, though, because Mako took a backseat in book 3, so Asami could step forward. And now, like, Asami, like, what's going on? Like, are we, like, they have established Asami and Korra as best friends, and we've had some great interactions. It's like you're going to drop the ball on the final during the final season. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's a lot of stuff they haven't
gotten to.
All
I need character development.
Yes.
So like,
yes.
here's the thing, right?
An Asami episode. So I'm hoping during like the field trip episode that Asami has her own plot line and something interesting happens.
That would be beautiful.
To me, the most frustrating part of there only being 5 episodes left to get, and we're almost certainly going to get straight plot in them, is the things we're not going to get to of the slower paced things, right?
Probably just not. Like, characters in general.
Okay, I'm about to list them. We're probably not going to get to Asami having more development with Hiroshi, Asami having more things to do on her own, Asami having further development with Korra. We're probably not going to see Jinora do much on her own other than she's going to be in the next episode. We're not going to see significant Jinkai/Kainora. We're not going to see Iki do much more. We're not going to see Rohan ever do anything. Other things we're not going to see. We're not going to see Mako and Korra like develop more, as if they're going to go to a relation, have any sort of romance thing at the end. We're not going to see more of where Mako is in his life right now. We're not going to see. We are seeing Bolin, that's for sure. We aren't going to see anything. There's not much happened with him plot wise, I guess.
Like,
although
he has no forward momentum. You know, he's kind of stagnant.
He's kind of stagnant. I agree. Yeah. We're not going to see anything with Lin. Sue will see something with, like, we might see like very basic amounts of everything I just listed, but nothing to a significant extent. There's only 5 episodes left. So that's
Mike and
the
Brian kind
part.
Of warned us about it though, like back in that IGN interview before book 4 started. They said that they just cannot have a parade of characters running around.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
It's understandable, but then like
I also just listed the main characters, so like,
I mean, it's part of world building to have a lot of characters, but like, you have to
understand
between these, like, who's a major character and who's a minor character.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
Jinora is a minor character. Like, she's
that's not true. Like, she was made a major character in book 3, and now she's relegated to a side character again. I understand pushing Kai and Bumi out of the season, but the ones I listed, I don't think so. Especially when Iki was not a major character, she was kind of put to the forefront in one episode.
Like, I'm not saying she was a major character, but Lin became much more of a character in book 3. Like,
she also was thrust into a major secondary role in book 3.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, like, and also her entire family is in danger.
Yeah, that's true. I assume Lin will do something.
We'll see more of Lin with Tom. Yeah.
Better.
Let me read Sam's thoughts on the episode, which is not that much.
It's all, you guys back?
It's a what? Okay. It's all Sam says. It's always good to have a breather episode before stuff gets real, like Ember Island Players. I really like that episode. So doing a clip show wasn't the worst choice in the world, given the circumstances. Good for them for lampshade hanging everything. Mako being a dummy, Vatu the evil flying kite, etc., etc. Bolin plus Vatu Varric section was easily the most entertaining. That phone call, and also I didn't notice until the end of my second watch that they superimpose Bolin head on the Korra's body. Korra and Asami are in love. Sam says, well, should I read this? Okay, I'll read this. I wonder if Korra and Asami ever talk about Mako's blank. And
they probably do.
I think yes. The answer is yes. And Sam finishes by saying, Dylan says we're not rating the episode. Niobe sticks to his word because I'm not giving it a rating. Yeah, we're not rating it. So there you go. I have some messages from you guys. Anon on Tumblr says, would the budget cut be the reason why we are not hearing from all the characters like Janora and all that this season, and why we haven't seen Kaya at all? Short answer, no. Brian, I think, made it pretty explicit in his Tumblr post that the budget cut basically said we don't have time for 15 minutes of animation, so we're cutting 15 minutes of animation from the season. I don't think it would affect things like Kaya or Janora, stuff like that. Lava Bending Ali says, do you think it is possible for Kurosami to be continued in the comics? I see them leaving an open ending in the comics saying, yeah, they totally blanked in book 3.
Please. Yes.
I mean, anything's possible in the comics, yeah. Right? Not that. Like, you should, not the quote that you said, right? Like, not they totally blanked. Like, that type of stuff is, look at the current comics. That type of stuff isn't happening. It's still very kid-friendly.
I'd be okay with just friendship adventures, too. Anything. Kor and Asami doing anything would be amazing.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what it is.
It's possible. Anything.
They could paint the entire mansion, and I wouldn't care, because I'd read it.
That would be great. What are you talking about?
I would love to have them.
That's a good idea for a fic, right? That's
and, like, do you, destroy write things that down. And paint the town red, and, yes. Like, talk about boys and girls and all sorts of people, and just to be wingmen, and just be great. Can they be superheroes? That's what I need.
Yeah, they'll be superheroes. Anyway.
Have you seen the picture of Kora as Robin and Asami's Batgirl? It's too much. It's so great.
I need to see this.
Anyway, Show Knight says, Show Knight's great. The way Mako was talking about Kora in this episode really solidified the breakup, in my opinion. How he said that Kora was an inspiration seemed to portray his feelings for her as deep admiration and as respect for a friend. After watching this week's episode, a Makora ending doesn't really look possible, in my opinion. I could be totally wrong, but this is just how I read the episode.
High five, Show Knight.
I think we kind of said basically what you said. Like, the key points of that Show Knight's saying are, one, the deep respect and admiration are things you would say to you for a friend. And we agree with that.
Yes.
It's also a sign of deep feelings, though, it should be noted. And after
but
watching
doesn't
this,
everyone have deep feelings
but
before,
I feel like
I mean,
if that would have been said by another person, I think it would have been.
I think Bolin could have said that line. Like, he wouldn't said it like that.
I think if Bolin had said it, just because Bolin, I feel, is more somebody who would say that.
Would people have taken it romantic if Asami had said it?
I mean people are taking it romantic when Mako said it, right? Like,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean.
Sure, shippers are going to take
it
romantically.
Some people can't, like,
I mean, I think
it's one of those lines that's very ambiguous, and it's just kind of what you want. Like, it's not.
From a non. I don't think it's ambiguous.
It shows
from
he cares, but, like, why he cares is just not. Presented.
That's the specific line. It's irrelevant why he cares. Like, that specific line from a non-chipping angle is non-romantic. However, if you want to take it with context of other things, then you could say it's romantic.
Well, I think taking it in the context of the clips before that, and, like, where we went, like, what happened for us to get to that line, I think it's very platonic.
But,
like, yeah, he also says friends, so.
From a speculation standpoint, I mean, there's several Makora people speculating it, but if they do go to see Zaheer, like, a lot of people are speculating that the she's made me more selfless thing is going to come into play. Like, they think that line had a meaning that's going to be more explored later on.
I'm pretty skeptical of anything, like, they're saying from the clip episode. It's going to be super important, but I understand what you're saying. And as we said, getting back to Shonai's question, yeah, I would say an overtly romantic ending for anything's out.
Yes.
I don't know if everyone agrees, but I'm pretty confident in that. I think that's all the feedback we have. So let's talk a little bit about what's to come. We have 5 episodes left, 4 weeks, 1 month. In the finale will likely be on December 19th. As of now, we're having an episode next week, even though it's Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving.
I wish Nick would tell us when the freaking finale is. I'm getting so frustrated.
I've tweeted at them many times,
oh
and
my
they
God.
Have yet to respond.
I want to bake a cake, and I need to get it ordered.
Like, the answer,
yeah,
the answer the answer is, if nothing changes, it's going to be December, I think it's 19th. It might be 18th.
Watch them show it, like, one episode at a time.
The finale, yeah, they could. I mean, oh, Nick could also just group as many episodes as they want as a finale, you know, right? The next five. But the natural finale is going to be two episodes. Like, we don't have that confirmed, but it's like, could you, there's not going to be a four episode finale from where we are now. But yeah, December 19th is where, the natural date would be. We have a lot to happen. It's weird because it kind of seems like we're not going to get that big twist we've kind of been hoping for, right?
Yeah.
It's not that much time to resolve the Kuvira plotline, but that being said, like, what's the next thing she's going to do, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen with Toph? What's going to happen with the Spirit Ray? And how's that going to create conflict with Korra? Mm-hmm. Answers? Anyone?
No.
thinking.
Well, I think a lot of it hinges on when Varric and Balin reach Republic City. Because I, for me,
is that
there's
where they're
two...
going?
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, they're going to Republic City. They're going to warn the world.
Did they say they're going to Republic City?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I can't
and
wait
for me,
Balin.
And for me, there are two like there's two ways this is going to go. That we have they get Varric and Balin get to Republic City in time, like before anything happens, to warn, and they're rushing to like save the swamp and all this stuff, like to stop Kuvira. Or when they get to Republic City, Kuvira has already attacked. The weapon has already, has already been designed, and it's
kind of like that one. Too. I think that one's more likely. They're going to come. It's going to be too late. You know
what
I mean?
That's
what
I think.
She's already going to have to like blow. Like she's already going to have blown something up, and they're going to have to like try and prevent.
To me, that's the
tragedy.
Twist. That's where the interest.
Or they're
going to
go on an offense. Or they're going to go on an offense, and have to like. Destroy it somehow from afar.
Or Varric will have to make maybe a counter weapon.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're going to get there in time, though? Like, because we see Mako and Korra going into that room with a bunch of vines, and we see Jinora going down in vines.
I don't think they're going to get there in time. To me, like, it's been so slow. And also, from a storytelling standpoint, for it to have any impact, they need to be too late.
Yeah.
From what it looks like now, obviously we don't know for sure. I mean, they could go. We have no idea about what anything's like about anything.
I just want to know what's going to kickstart like all of the scenes we've seen with the vines. Like there has to be something happen pretty quick.
It seems so like something they would do. I feel like if they're gonna do like this is the finale. This is the last season of making anything. They're gonna go all out. And I'm just trying to think like. Big, like what's something ridiculous? Not
honestly,
just
destroying
like,
destroying the tree.
Do.
That one, that's a connection to Avatar. We are all connected to that. If they destroy the tree, like one that like radically changes the world. If everything is connected through.
So like, what happens with the tree? Does like all of them? Is there going to be like a Chernobyl when the tree just kind of explodes? Like. That doesn't make any sense, though. Like,
I think something's going to happen to Republic City.
Do all the spirits turn evil?
I feel like in Republic City, that'd be really dry. Like, that'd be really like, oh, okay. Like, oh, we've blown up Republic City again. I definitely think that could happen. Like, that's definitely, like, a very, like, plausible, and, I mean, in all honesty, because I'm saying this.
And she goes, like, on a rampage.
No, I don't want Batar to die. I want Toph to destroy Batar. That's what I want to happen.
So, I guess from a more localized like perspective, like so, next episode we're going to speculate on everything we speculated on last week on the podcast because it didn't happen this week. So like it's the Macora field trip, the possible Zaheer, the Queen of the Fairies.
Yes,
and
flying.
Please refer to her by her proper name, the Queen of the Fairies. And
you've always said Jinora was a queen.
It's true, though. But yeah, so I expect to see everything from the trailer that's left in next week's episode.
And after that, we're all just gonna die.
That's not from like a plot perspective. I genuinely don't know how they're all gonna come together. But from a production perspective, I don't think they're done with episode. What is even next episode? Episode 9? So I don't think they're done with episode 10 at this point. I also didn't think they're done with episode 9, so I'm a little surprised. But yeah.
A little worrisome.
I mean, the trailer is a while ago. We've had a lot of time since then. Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen. That's the thing.
They just wrote like a few weeks ago that they just finished sound mixing episode 9, didn't they?
Yeah. Right, so they must have been done really far in advance with the animation on it. That's the thing, the color correction. That's why I didn't think there'd be anything from episode 9. They only finished the levels a few weeks ago, so I guess the the color correction happens a lot before the. So I mean, it would make sense. Color correction the finishes, then they give it to Jeremy, then they do the levels. Yeah, those were just those were cut clips. Yeah.
Yeah, those got cut. Like, yeah. That was the episode they were gonna make, and then what if that was? That'd be awful.
That's the episode. That doesn't make any sense.
No,
but okay.
I know. I was joking.
Okay. Serious. I don't know. Any specific predictions? Get them in now.
Toph is going to happen.
Macora field trip.
I mean, obviously, that's not really. It's like in the trailer.
I think Lynn, Lynn
and
is going to be
will
thing.
Get off the boat.
I think Varric and Bolin might, like, okay, so if we talk about, like, who are they going to go to? Like, Ryko is useless, let's be serious. So, unless, if they don't go to Ryko, they're going to go to
Tenzin
or Lynn. Because if Mako and Korra are gone, unless Mako and Korra are going off because
like,
of this warning.
Like Lynn's going to be in the plot.
See, that's what
Lynn
I was wondering.
Her sister is, she told her, oh my god, there's been so much growth with Lynn. She told Sue she loved her. Her entire family's in danger. And Lynn and Sue have to talk to each other. I'm going to die, Dylan. It has to happen. Let me have my hope.
Yeah, they also do have to rescue Sue. That's another thing.
Like they have to rescue Sue. Like, I feel the entire family is in prison. Toph isn't going to be about that. And neither is Lynn.
No.
It's gonna be Beifong family field trip.
Oh wait! I forgot. Next episode we hear Izumi speak.
You mean Honora?
Yeah, we hear Honora speak.
I'm excited.
Oh yeah.
That's next episode.
What if she uses
at the very least
she gives Mako and Korra a quest.
At the very least, she appears right. Like her character design sheet, which was almost unintentionally given to us by Colin Heck, says episode 9. So. We will likely be seeing her next episode. Cool.
She's gonna give Mako and Korra.
Maybe it's a field trip between Mako, Korra, and Honora.
That'd be amazing. Please, can that be a thing?
And then she just, like, insults them the entire time because she's, like, really harsh.
Yes. Yeah. No, she's an abysmal dork. She is Zuko in female.
Zuko in female.
Except she's really mopey about it because she's Mei.
Yes.
Like, it's great. Like, I'm like, really excited about this. This is gonna be too much. This is gonna be a big deal about how she acts. I can't wait.
I don't know. I didn't think about, Honor in the picture. I don't know how she's gonna tie in. We know Jinora's doing something. Is she in the Jinora plot? Can she and Jinora talk? That would be the best thing ever.
We know absolutely nothing, and it's wonderful.
She's gonna become best friends with Jinora.
That's way much better. That's so
done.
Much better.
Canon best friends.
They're gonna
with
read. They're gonna have a book club.
Yes,
yes
they're gonna book it, and then Mako like shows up after he's done with the field trip, and then Jinora gives him like two reading levels below her a book on that, and
more
there you go.
Two,
like only two. Like it's probably more than that.
More than two, definitely. Like she gave him like one of Iki's books.
Oh God!
I do. This is my favorite Mako headcanon.
I think we have officially gotten very off topic.
I mean, this is the topic we're speculating.
This is so off topic.
Anyway, yeah.
That episode, is anything on topic? Honestly, no.
That's true.
Batu had a telephone. Like, there was a line and we're past it.
I don't think
Batu had a telephone.
Oh my god, that was so good.
Time.
So
like,
good.
I
anyway, there we don't.
I really wish they had gotten completely ridiculous. You know, it would have been a great recap episode if they had had like the money and it didn't have to be like a clip episode. If they had gotten like Iki and Jinora and Milo and they had like done like little stick figures in like one of the sections and they like wrote out Korra coming to Republic
or
City.
Or Varric had been secretly filming it the entire time.
That actually would have been a really nice, because they've been doing the Milo drawing thing the entire time. So like then we see like Iki's drawings, which are all bad, and then we like see Rohan's stick figures or something. And then Jinora's narrating, and then certain parts of it are just like eloquently animated by Milo and stuff like that. Yeah, that actually would have been really nice.
I would have loved to have like a little Rohan like stick figure, like little scribbles that are supposed to be characters.
Like Rohan colored all of it, so the outlines are beautiful, but then the colors are crap because Rohan did it. That'd be great.
So Milo's like, you're bad at coloring.
Yeah. Rohan, you have to color inside the lines.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That would have been a way to save money. Have scribbles as the animation.
Yes.
They could have done that.
They just needed to be an avatar color.
They could have just been like, here, animate it for us.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been adorable.
Okay.
I would have enjoyed it.
I will say, the one thing I want from the I have no idea what's going to happen the last five episodes. The one thing I want is for something like huge, non predicting with Kuvira to happen, right? Like, it could involve Kuvira, but I just want something that makes sense. I don't want Kuvira to become a giant monster and then fight fight Korra, a giant monster. Yeah. Something that makes sense, which is really huge and world huge and
death,
huge and world breaking.
Me too. Somebody needs to die.
I mean, if you want someone to die, it's either going to be Mako or Korra.
Or Toph.
I mean, like Toph dying. So here's the thing. Here's the thing with Toph dying.
Or Katara.
It like either one of those. It doesn't have an impact. The same impact like someone from the main cast has.
Yeah, I want it to be tragic.
Yeah, I do too.
Katara's old. Maybe Varric will die saving Julie.
That could happen.
Stop.
And then and then the epilogue is just Julie's life without Varric.
No.
Like 10 years later, she's like moving on.
See, I just want some consequences. Like, bring on the consequences and death.
Yeah, bring on the death. I'm going to quote you on that.
Me and Mary just like
want death.
Mary wants death. Okay. No, I don't want this to just be like.
I don't want a happy ending. I want someone to have to be like. I want a funeral. I saw Hunger Games last night. I need
you want a funeral. You are ready for death. Okay.
I mean, okay.
Oh my god, that movie was like.
Just wait till the second movie, I guess. But yeah.
No, the first movie was bad. Like, I don't even know how I'm gonna sit through the second movie. I almost like lost it in the theater.
Oh, I did too.
I mean, I assume the meaningful one isn't until the second movie. It can't be. So, like, that's the actual impactful
really
one.
That last shot in that movie.
Okay, I haven't seen those spoilers. Okay, anyway. let's wrap things up.
We're going to get, like, five, like, really angry, like,
we didn't spoil, iTunes I think.
Reviews. They got off topic really
Yeah, they got off topic, exactly, yeah. Anyway, I've been your main host, Dylan. Plus, I've been Britt Delaney and Mara. Tech director AJ Kevin Jeff, musical credits Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, the Trip logo and banner by Kevin, Dong Feng's one by Jake, special contributor Gareth, contributors Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, Jamie.
Auctioneer Dylan.
Yes. G Millionaire, Zeramis, Nick at Night, Rudy, and Tabuti, Coin, Fetchin, Opal, Iroh, J Nora. You can go to dongfeng.net/podcast. You can donate, you can click on our bios, you can email us at dylan@dongfeng.net. You can see our Twitter at Dongwufeng and our Tumblr at Dongwufeng. You need to be following our Tumblr for the clip tonight and the episode name, which is going to be pretty big. It's going to be the. Yeah. I don't know. What's it going to be? It's going to be like.
The bomb. I don't know.
The return of Zaheer, obviously.
The ticking time bomb.
The field trip, yeah. The Zuko's field trip, yeah.
Yes.
And then the journey. It could be the Fire Lord, right? Like, because we know she's in the episode.
That'd be great.
The dongfeng.net/forums. You can give feedback on this.
Do you think Zuko has grandchildren?
No. And
what do you? Yeah, Zuko.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Zuko has
great grandchildren. No.
Zuko has grandchildren.
No.
I keep thinking that's just like a younger child. Sorry, I'm having a moment.
Iroh could have siblings, and they could have children. We don't know if Iroh's the crown prince or not.
I mean, is Iroh married? Do we know?
Iroh saw me for life.
No.
I feel you.
What if Iroh's married and he has, like, a wife and, like, 50 kids? Dang, we don't know anything.
We don't. I guess he's coming back, but he's, like, the least important character. You can give us feedback on this. Give me feedback on this. dongfeng.net/forums or on my Tumblr at DylanFTSW. Send us voicemail for next week. Next week's podcast. Are you okay, Britt? No response. That's bad.
Yeah, so comforting.
I hear a cough. Britt, are you okay? Okay.
I choked on my coffee when Dylan said something funny.
Heads up. Next week's podcast will not be out at the normal time on Friday. It will either be out late Friday night or Saturday afternoon. I am going to be out of town until Friday night next week. I think we're going to try to get it up Friday night. Obviously, everyone's going to be having Thanksgiving stuff. It's understandable. I
finally get to go home.
Aw.
Yep,
same, but yeah, it's so yeah, like don't, you can ask me on Tumblr for more specifics as we get closer. I don't know yet, but not gonna be until late, but we will be podcasting that weekend, and then we're gonna be locked in for probably Friday afternoons until the finale, which isn't that much. Four weeks of podcast left. Four weeks of episodes.
Terrible. I want to go slide down a wall and cry.
Slide down a
wall. Wow, so many good Mare quotes today. I want death. I want to go slide down a wall and cry. Yeah.
And then like, oh god, what are we even going to end on? The episode? And then everything we said? Like, there's too much.
What are we going to end on now? There's a lot. Like, there's a lot we could end on.
Like, I mean, how can we possibly...
I mean, we could do So Pretty to Smell. We could do the kite. We could.
The kite.
I mean,
no, we did.
Glad I caught you at home. Down.
Glad I caught you at home.
I'm glad I caught you at
biggest,
home.
Meanest, scariest kite. I mean, that's probably the best one because this is like a that was a directed at the podcast line. We could do that. There's so many good ones.
There's
anyway,
so, it's the entire. It was so great.
Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Podcast up late next week. Let's end on whatever you feel like. But I'm gonna do biggest, meanest, scariest guy.
That's
one.
What I'm gonna do.
Thanks, guys. 1, 2, 3. Biggest, meanest, scariest guy.
Kite.
I love all you guys.
Whoever flew.
So pretty to smell. Yes.